Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Internet Hottest Show and Podcast, The Author's Lab, a place for an eclectic and lively discussion of the dynamic world of writing, publishing, and marketing of the written word. I'm your host, Robert Batista. Follow me on Twitter at author R. Batista. And make it a point to follow The Author's Lab on Blog Talk Radio. Just click the follow button on your page. We are waiting for today's guest, author Lindsay Wong, who is the author of the award-winning groundbreaking memoir, The Woo Woo, How I Survived Ice Hockey, Drug Raids, Demons, and My Crazy Chinese Family. So she should be calling in from Vancouver any second now. And I am on contact with her on Twitter, and I understand that she may be having some technical difficulties calling in. Hey, Lindsay, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm finally here.
Oh, you are. You are. And like I just want to say again, today we are honored to have as our guest Lindsay Wong, author of the award-winning, groundbreaking memoir, The Woo Woo, How I Survived Ice Hockey, Drug Raids, Demons, and My Crazy Chinese Family. Lindsay, welcome to The Author's Lab.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
Oh, I'm excited to have you. Lindsay, it's so great having you on the show, and there is so much to get to. So let's start off with you describing your life before you wrote your book. Who was Lindsay Wong before the birth of the Woo Woo?
I would say Lindsay Wong is still the same person. I'm just a lot more busier nowadays, but everything is the same. You know, people are always like, your life will change forever, you know, if you write a book. But honestly, you know, it's more of, you know, I have more emails now. I have a more event, but everything is the same. In terms of who Lindsay Wong is as a person, she's still pretty, you know, she's still pretty introverted. She's really not that interesting. I mean, I'm one of those people, things happen in my life, yes. But in terms of who I am, you know, I'm the type of person, I just want to stay home, watch TV, read a book. That's who I am.
Was there any one incident, Lindsay, or catalyst that caused you to write this story, or had it been germinating in your mind for a period of time?
For sure. I think memoir is something that happens, you know, to be something that you kind of cultivate, you know, if you have a sort of a crazy life, if you have a lot of things happen, whether tragic or funny, you know, sometimes it's like, maybe, you know, this could be a book. I mean, I didn't start writing until my undergrad year when I started writing these character sketches for school, and my teachers and my other workshop members were like, this is kind of weird, you know, have you thought about writing a book? And I was like, yeah, maybe. And then I went off and did my MFA at Columbia. And then I realized that, yeah, I actually do have a book. I have enough things in my life that could kind of make an art. I don't think people write memoir because they want to. I think it just finds them, right? It's kind of like, oh, now I have to write this book because I have to make sense of who I am or what happened to me.
Your mother and other family members believed heavily in the woo-woo or demons and ghosts. Talk about how that affected you as a child growing up, did you really accept these beliefs or did you rebel against them?
I think as a child, you sort of kind of believe that, you know, your family is right. You know, you kind of take what people tell you at face value. So if your mother is like, you know, there are ghosts following us, we're going to live in the food court and we are going to stay there, you know, until your dad gets home and we're going to be safe. So, you know, as a kid, 6 years old, you're kind of like, oh yeah, yeah, for sure. You know, mom is right. But as you move through the world, when you start, you know, being a teenager, you begin questioning. You're like, well, you know, other people aren't doing this. Like, other people aren't living at Walmart for summer vacation. So why are we? And, you know, as you move through the world, as you get older, you move to college, you know, you leave home, then you start really understanding, yeah, I know my childhood was messed up. And I think that happens to most kids. You know, you kind of take what your family tells you, and then you have to be able to kind of see, you know, through a different lens, like, you know, yeah, you know, my family had mental illness. What they did wasn't right. And, you know, that is sort of like what the woo-woo is about, and finding, you know, who you are in relation to your family.
Lindsay, memoirs are often cathartic, but they could also be agonizing in that we relive the painful experiences that we went through. Was there a lot of pain in writing this story?
In many, many ways, for sure. I mean, memoir is not fun. I think if anyone tells you that, they're lying or there's something wrong with them. But it's sort of like you have to be able to find the moments in your past that made you or hurt you. And so you're sort of drawing on and kind of, you know, evaluating each experience, because, you know, not everything can go in your book. So you are picking and choosing, and you are finding the moments that made you feel the most sad or the ones that are most personal. And I think any good memoir includes those moments. So you are kind of like picking at the scab, you know, like you're like trying to get at the root of something. And there are many times when I did not want to write this book. I did many revisions. This book was rejected 13 times by major publishers. And, you know, each time I had to go back and sort of read again and again. To be honest, I have not read my book since it came out. I mean, I have read excerpts, but I have not read it from beginning to end. I just don't want to go back there.
You know, it's amazing, Lindsay. I talked to so many people who wrote memoirs, and a lot of them tell me that it got so painful while they were writing it, they actually had to put the book down. They had to stop writing the manuscript, leave it on the shelf for weeks, even months, and then go back to it because, as you said, it was so painful. And, yeah, I can definitely relate to your experience. Lindsay, the book opens up with you talking about this severe episode of vertigo. Can you describe where you were and what it felt like?
So I had just moved to New York City. I was very young. I was in my early 20s. And, you know, when you're at that age and, you know, you move to New York, you feel like, you know, your life is here. Anything could happen. And I remember just being, you know, a few days in, I started to spin, you know, in my head. Things started to move. I was really dizzy. I was nauseous. And I remember being kind of scared because there's mental illness in my family. The summer before, my aunt had taken the city of Vancouver hostage by trying to jump off a bridge. And I thought, you know, am I having a psychotic breakdown? What's wrong with me? Because this vertigo was relentless. It wasn't like, you know, I'm suddenly dizzy. It was sort of like extreme symptoms that wouldn't go away. And I remember being so terrified. I was like, you know, what is going on? Am I going to be like my aunt who has mental illness? Will I be like my mother? Will I be like my grandmother? Because my grandmother has paranoid schizophrenia. And, you know, this was sort of like one of the most scariest moments of my life. And I almost had to wait a year before I could get a diagnosis. I had seen 11 specialists, mostly ENT doctors, who were all like, you know, you probably just have, you know, one of those, you know, benign vertigo caused by an imbalance in the ear. And my ear was fine. No one knew what was going on with me. And I think, you know, being at the age, being young, you're away from home, you don't know what's wrong with you. And I think that's always scary for anyone.
Yeah, I'm from New York and worked in Manhattan for years and years. So how was your New York experience, and would you ever live there?
I love being in New York. When I was a student, I was a grad student, but at the time, as I write my book, I was very, very sick. So, you know, if you have vertigo, Manhattan's not the best place to be. There's always cars, there's always people, right? And being very, very stubborn, I was like, I'm going to finish my program. I'm going to finish grad school no matter what. And at one point, I couldn't even read or write because the spinning and the nausea was so bad. So I can tell you that my experience in Manhattan was I was living in my graduate school housing. I would go there. I would go to the student medical center. I would probably go to class and the hospital. So these were like sort of like four places that I went to during my New York experience. But no, I definitely want to go back, and I would love to be a tourist in the city that I was sick in for 5 years.
Let's talk about two very important pieces of marketing a book, the title and the book cover. How did you decide on the title? It's very captivating.
Well, thank you. I just thought the title was one of the hardest things because, you know, I didn't know what to call my book because there were so many things going on. But I felt that, you know, the woo-woo in our family, it means Chinese ghost. And that's something we always say. So I thought maybe, you know, the woo-woo, we could use something about something involving the woo-woo. But then how else to, you know, kind of describe it? Because no one's going to read it. Maybe someone would read a book, the woo-woo, they don't know what it is. So we came up with this long title, How I Survived Ice Hockey, Drug Raids, Demons, and My Crazy Chinese Family, which sort of really sums up what the whole book is about. It's about surviving, but it's also, you know, a dark comedy. In terms of the cover, I was really, really lucky. I had a great cover designer at Arsenal Pulp Press, and they asked me, you know, what do you want on the cover? And I said, you know, how about a pig? You know, like our family has a 300-pound pig delivered for every wedding, funeral, and birth of a child. And pigs are considered really lucky. In Chinese culture, and this year is actually Year of the Pig. So I said, how about, you know, let's put a pig on the cover. And they're like, sure, sure. But they're like, what kind of pig? And I said, make it cute and weird, just like me. And so they really delivered. I love the cover. So they did an amazing job.
Yeah, and I also think that roasting pig with the apple in its mouth is definitely a metaphor. And I just think the cover is brilliant.
I think it's hilarious. So I really appreciate that they were able to make my vision come alive. It's very me. So, you know, what more can an author ask for?
Lindsay, you have graciously agreed to read a portion of your book for us. Can you do this now and set up the piece before reading?
Of course. Let me just turn to you. So I'm going to read a little bit from the book about my family. And so this will sort of give you an idea about what the level of, you know, craziness and level of poverty and intergenerational trauma that happened to my family. My grandmother is from China, and they had immigrated to Hong Kong during the communist reign. So this is a little bit of my family.
Great.
My mother had survived third world poverty in what had once been the rural outskirts of Hong Kong. Her grandfather's prosperous merchant family had sold their schizophrenic daughter, my grandma, the poor man, for just $100 before jumping ship to Vancouver. Not only had my grandmother been cut off from the family fortune, but she had basically been abandoned in a backwater village to run around barefoot and being famously crazy. So my mother and her siblings had grown up with nothing to eat but all the cigarettes they cared to smoke. Gong Gong, my grandfather, doled out economy packs like candy because he got them for free with his gambling, win or lose. I imagined my mother and my aunties and uncles as toddlers, squatting in ankle-deep mud, chubby black flies chewing the thick grease off your scalp, smoking cigarettes, having a blast. Because as soon as you turned 2 years old, Gungun proudly handed you your very own pack to help with the hunger. When they were lucky enough to buy a whole chicken, only the boys could partake in a skimpy meal. And I imagined my mother as a kid, smugly huffing and puffing on her cigarettes all day long, as she watched her brothers gorge on fresh meat. Each of the 8 kids had a favorite sibling or someone they felt a little sorry for. My mother looked out for my aunt, who was 6 years younger. She was responsible for plucking life out of beautiful one's thick, horsey hair. And when beautiful one was too vain to want an ugly boy's haircut, my mother would slap her into agreement. A sympathetic auntie once told me, "Lucky you. You got the meanest person in the family for your mommy," which was true, because my mother was certainly the most demanding sister. In times of famine and hardship, having my mother around meant that you had a better chance of survival. At mealtime, the quickest or the biggest kid got the most rice through speed or physical intimidation. In those simple village days, dinners were violent world wars. Alliances and strategies had to be forged and schemed. If you were not a blessed boy, the chicken thighs were definitely out of the question. But as a little girl, you could always brawl over a mizzly gizzard or a bleeding poultry heart. My mother shared her dinner organs with my aunt, and sometimes she did not eat. This is the compassionate side of my mother that I had never seen, and it seemed that it had slowly leaked out like battery acid during her marriage to my father, had a selfishly polarizing effect on her. It was almost as if she'd hide any slivers of kindheartedness from my father to avoid being discovered for what she really was or what she could be. So a little self-sacrifice and compassion, and my father might mock you, that a nasty ghost would take possession of you. At dinner parties, when the aunties and uncles talked about the old days, they loved to compare the exact size and length of their parasites. Supposedly, these were dangling snakes that they had to pluck out from their assholes. And my mother always bragged about her squiggling cobra being 4 feet long, whereas beautiful ones and hers was a beast at 6 feet. They could spend hours arguing over whose monster worm was scarier, which one was scarier, whose had a googly eye. And I assumed that because they had nothing to focus on back then, except their miserable poverty, this is what they discussed the past 2 hours as they happily cussed a pack a day. The dimensions and forms of these mythological serpents had been discussed to death. The siblings all complained about their terrible childhood hunger. To reassure themselves that a food shortage did not exist anymore, they ordered in dozens of cardboard pizzas, soggy boxes of saturated fried chicken, and entire menus from the greasy food for the New Year. The sweet and sour pork bleeding a vicious celebratory red, the black fermented fish heads tossed in negative fried rice, everything and anything ordered to make up for not eating when they were children. Of course, all the cousins had lost their appetites by now, and we stared at the foot-long, slimy rice noodles with caterpillar-like vermicelli coagulating in sweating sauce with creepy, unspeakable horror. So this is just a version of my childhood, of growing up in a family that values food so much because they had starved in Hong Kong.
Wow, that was magnificent. It just makes me want to read more. That was really, really good. So, Lindsay, let me ask you, who were some of the authors and what were some of the books that you enjoyed when you were in, like, high school and coming up? Who are your authors that you enjoyed?
I was not really much of a reader, actually, until university, I would have to say. That was, you know, where I sort of, you know, really fell in love with books. But I was always really fascinated by a memoirist, Evan Lau. She's a Vancouver author who had a really tough childhood, and she grew up with Asian immigrant parents. And she was someone that I looked up to as an author. In terms of writing this book, David Sedaris, he's so funny, Augustine Burroughs, Mary Carr, I think there's so much, you know, these people are able to convey their, you know, not so happy childhoods in such, you know, compelling way. You know, they're able to use humor and they're able to turn the tragic into the comedic, which I love and I admire that, because I think with memoir writing, you know, you have to be able to entertain your audience. You have to make your audience laugh at some of the most horrible things that happen to you. Otherwise, no one wants to read your memoir, right? So I think those are the writers that I look up to the most.
Yeah, Lindsay. And the general consensus is that you do have that gift of mixing the humor with the story, and that's no small task. You know, Lindsay, legend has it, as you spoke a little while ago, that your manuscript was rejected several times. Talk about the challenges you had in publishing The Woo-Woo.
Right. I mean, I think my manuscript was rejected 13 times, so, you know, lucky 13. So I don't know if that means anything, but publishing The Woo-Woo was really difficult. I had many publishers tell my agent and me that, you know, this book is too dark. It's too niche. You know, no one wants to read a book about a crazy Chinese family. And I think that shows in many ways, you know, mainstream publishing, maybe, you know, they're not so sure about what readers want. And maybe, you know, they aren't, you know, this is a topic that's unfamiliar to them. So people are always a little hesitant to take a chance on something
right.
that they're not. And so with this book, you know, my agent was like, maybe, you know, we should try something else. And I was like, no. Like, I really want this book published. And so I was able to find a small publisher for it who just loved the book. And before it came out, actually, it was actually nominated for the Hilly Weston Prize, which is for best nonfiction in Canada. And so we were like, okay, maybe there's something to this book, you know, like it's not out yet, but, you know, people are interested in it. And so I think I have people emailing me all the time, especially young writers who are like, how can I get published? I think it's all about, you know, being persistent and having that grit
right.
to be like, no one, people are saying this book is not, you know, for them, or it's not this or not that, but you have to sort of really, really believe that you have that talent or you have that book that needs to be out there. And I think it's mostly sort of not really listening to sometimes what the feedback is from publishing professionals. And it's sort of like pushing your own narrative and being like, I have a book, I believe in it, you know, it deserves, you know, to be in the world.
Yeah, it's amazing how the lack of diversity with the mainstream, and if it's not about vampires and werewolves and dystopia and romance, I mean, they have no use for it. And there is such a demand, really, for diverse books. And, you know, your book, The Woo-Woo, my book, Street Angel, I mean, you know, how diverse can you get? And both of them are well written from what I see with your book as well. And, you know, Lindsay, why I relate to your book so much is that it puts a spotlight on something that affects more families than we realize, and that is mental health. My family has been affected by it. A blurb for the book states that yours was a dysfunctional Asian family whose members blamed their woes on ghosts and demons when in fact they should have been on antipsychotic meds. Though mental illness is now written about and discussed more open these days, there are still people who are uncomfortable with this topic. Would you agree, Lindsay, and why do you think this is so?
Oh, for sure. I think that there is a huge stigma about mental health. It affects, you know, 1 out of 5 Canadians, 1 out of 4 Americans. And I think because we can't see it, it's an invisible illness. Like we go to the doctor because, you know, we're sick or, you know, something physical, but it's, you know, you might look okay, but the mind, right, it's there, you know, a mind is just like a foot or something, you know, that you can diagnose and fix. And I think, especially in Asian culture or in cultures that are more conservative, not talking about it is something that we tend to do. We tend to pretend it's not happening, or we blame it on something else. Like in my case, my family says it's, you know, caused by ghosts. And I think
right.
just that shame that people need to overcome and to be able to kind of be like, it's okay. I have friends who are my age, and they're afraid to tell their parents that they're seeing a therapist, because their parents are going to sort of dismiss them for having depression or anxiety. And I
right.
think there are, Western culture is definitely more open about it, but there is that fear, right, of being judged.
With any autobiography or memoir, you not only tell your story, but also those around you. How did your family react to the book?
So my family has always been a little bit strange, in that we tend not to talk about anything uncomfortable. You know, we're the type of family, you have dinner together and everyone's like, you know, kind of talking about or not talking about anything really important. So when the book
right.
came out, no one said anything. I said to my brother, I said, you know, so what's going on? And he's like, oh yeah, mom and dad got it from the library because they don't want to spend any more money on you. And I was like, oh, okay. So I found out they were like number 10 on the list. So I guess, you know, I waited. I finally asked my brother again, you know, did they read it? What do they think? And he was like, yeah, they read it, but you know, I don't know what they think. I'm like, oh, okay, but no one's talking about it. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of good, right? And then he was like, yeah, you know, I guess. I'm like, are you going to read it? And he's like, probably not. I think you're kind of a shitty writer. And, you know, so that's my family for you, right? We just don't talk about anything important. And so I asked, you know, I think even with, like, my family, if I said, what do you think of the book? They might just, like, pretend it's not happening or it's not there. But I guess it's good, right? Because it means, you know, I can write whatever I want.
So I take it that none of your family were used as consultants or beta readers who advise you on the story.
I mean, I did interview family members for my, this began as a thesis for, at Columbia. They knew I was doing it, you know, okay. In terms of, you know, I had to ask about, you know, what was your childhood like? What was this like? And they did tell me. But I think none of them, you know, they knew that something was cooking, but I don't think they cared enough to read it. We're not a literary family. It could also be that, you know, my parents are immigrants. They don't read. Right. Our family's not a reader. So that could also be a factor.
So the book wins the prestigious Hubert Evans Prize in Nonfiction. Wow. How did it feel winning this award?
It was pretty surreal. I mean, I am so lucky that to have this happen to me for my first book. I'd gone to, you know, award ceremonies previous, and, you know, and it was always fun. And I always knew, like, no, I'm not going to win because, you know, I'm a first-time author and there's so many, you know, brilliant other authors. And when that happened, that this is Hubert Evans, the BC Book Prizes, I was like, what? You know, this is strange, but, you know, this is wonderful. I mean, I think any author, you know, you don't necessarily go in thinking about the prizes you're going to win or the acclaim you get if you write a book.
Right.
You just want to focus on craft. You just want to have, I just wanted a book out there. I thought that if I had written this book, you know, nothing would happen. I would just sort of hand it in, you know, have a little thing on my shelf and be like, okay, next project, right? But it's always really shocking when people are like, we love your book, you know, we recognize you, and it's just been lovely.
That leads into my next question. Let's talk about the legacy of the Woo Woo. What was the reactions from readers, and do they still contact you about your book today?
Yeah, I mean, I've had some really nice, lovely letters from people who were like, I have this in my family too. I have mental illness. You know, I can completely relate to everything in this book. And there are a lot of people who thanked me for my story because they were able to recognize something in them. I remember one lady at a reading, she told me she came from a very staunch Catholic background. And she herself thought she could not relate to anything in the book because, you know, Chinese culture is so different. But she said that she found it so honest. And she had, you know, mental illness in her family as well. And the way she said I was able to capture it really resonated with her. I do get a lot of emails still from people. A lot of people definitely want to know how to get published. They want to know a lot about my agent, how to get an agent. So my inbox is definitely filled. So I'm always apologizing because I'm always behind. And then, you know, there are people who are like, you know, this book is poorly written or you're a sociopath. You know, you will get certain responses from readers. But I think the main point is just as a writer, you have to develop a really thick skin and know that, you know, a book that touches someone else is not going to feel the same way.
Lindsay, is the Woo Woo going to be made into a film eventually? Have you been approached?
I am working on a secret project. I can't really talk much about it, but I hope so. I mean, I would love that to have Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because to me, this screams for a film. I think this would make an excellent film. So let's switch gears and talk about social media. I know you're on Twitter and such. Of the social media platforms, which one do you feel is the most beneficial for your brand? And which, in your estimation, is the best for authors? Or do you feel that each platform offers its own special compensations?
To be honest, I never really used social media until my agent was like, you need to get Twitter. And then even then, I have to admit, I didn't really use Twitter until this year. And then I had to learn how to use it because as a writer, you know, you just want to focus on your craft. I didn't realize that, okay, being an author, you sort of have to, you know, tweet and tell people what you're up to, which has been, I think, one of the harder things besides public speaking when you're like promoting a book. I think Twitter is great in terms of being able to reach a lot of people. For me personally, I feel comfortable with Facebook. I mean, I'm a millennial. I grew up with Facebook, right?
Right.
And then Facebook, you know, you have your personal page, and then whereas Twitter, you can sort of, you know, keep it more professional. I do have Instagram, but I have not used it, so I'm probably not the best person to ask for social media. But definitely, I say Twitter has been really useful in terms of getting out when events are coming, sharing interviews or sharing podcasts, and you know, reconnected over Twitter. So that's always great, right? To meet other people who are interested in doing things in the industry.
Yes, I love Twitter because I've met so many wonderful authors such as yourself. So Lindsay, in closing, let's talk about your next book, Iris Wang's Summer of Love and Misfortune. Can you give us a peek into the story and when it will be coming out?
So this is a YA book, and it comes out in 2020 from Simon Pulse. And it's about a Chinese girl who's imperfect in every way. She fails out of high school. She can't get any new colleges. And her parents are like, what's wrong with you? You know, she's done everything. And being, Chinese American, you know, she's sort of expected to definitely get into college. And so her parents are like, okay, we're going to send you to Beijing. And she gets sent to Beijing to kind of, you know, learn about herself and her culture. But of course, you know, all these shenanigans happen. So it's a lot of fun and hopefully funny.
Sounds like an excellent, excellent premise. Can't wait. So if people want to get in, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. So if people want to get in contact with you, Lindsay, can you give out your website address and any other contact info?
I'm on Twitter, and my handle is this is embarrassing. I don't even know my Twitter handle. It's at Lindsay M. Wong, and I'm just gonna check for my website right now, very quickly.
Go ahead. We'll wait.
So my website is. Sorry, it's Lindsay Wong. LindsayMWong@.wordpress.com. But you can definitely find me on Twitter. Just Google for Lindsay Wong.
This has been the Author's Lab with me, Robert Batista. My mission is to give writers a platform to show you who they are. One of my stories, My Baby Has No Name, can be read for free online at Booksy.com. My guest has been author Lindsay Wong, and make sure you pick up her fantastic coming-of-age story, The Woo-Woo, How I Survived Ice Hockey, Drug Raids, Demons, and My Crazy Chinese Family. Thank you so much, Lindsay, for being my guest on the Author's Lab. Have a great day.
Thank you so much for having me.